And so the journey begins for Team Stualetta on CBC's Battle of the Blades, and our off-season tour touches down in the Metro. Washington and Philadelphia are on the clock today. It's the Friday edition of Hockey Central here on Sportsnet 590. The Fan, Nick Alberga, joined alongside Brian Burke and Mr. Triple Axel himself, Anthony Stewart. Thanks to Matt Marchese, Dylan Brown, and Lance Kennedy for their hard work behind the scenes. Momentarily, Capitals TV analyst Craig Lachlan will drop by. Washington has a new head coach as well as a pretty high-profile backup goalie. We'll get into that with Locker coming up. And at about 30 from now, Flyers studio analyst Colby Cohen will drop by. Been a fairly quiet offseason, I would say, for Philadelphia so far, with exception to the surprising Matt Niskanen retirement announcement. But first, guys, we got to get to it. Season 6, Battle of the Blades, debuted last night on CBC. And among the entrants, our very own three-time All-Ontario champion himself, Anthony Stewart. Stewie, how was it, buddy?
It was definitely nerve-wracking, to say the least. And I'll say it before Berkey says it, and I will not be quitting my day job. So that's a fact. But it was definitely a lot of fun. My partner, Violetta, was great. She had a smile on her face the whole entire time. And it was actually a lot more nerve-wracking than I thought. I don't remember being that nervous. I think the only time I've been that nervous as a hockey player is when Chara was chasing me around the ice. That's probably the same. I'd equate it to that. But great experience for a great cause. And I'm definitely excited and pleased with my performance in week one.
You smashed it. Congratulations, Berkey. We got to get you on the panel for judging. I think you'd be great on there.
No, thanks.
Berkey, I know regular TV adds 10 pounds, but figure skating TV adds 20 pounds. I was looking a little tick last night.
Hey, you've been working really hard to shed the weight there, Stu. I'm proud of you. You're going to get that steak dinner, I think.
Oh, you look
Thanks
phenomenal,
a lot,
Stewie.
Thanks for your support.
You did fantastic last night.
Stewie has been working very hard to drop weight, and I told him if he hits his target, I'll buy him a steak dinner at Barbarians.
Love that. And Stewie, you do look great. Excellent job last night. Can't wait for the next episode. Put in my vote last night. I know the voting period now over, but make sure to tune in to the next episode of Battle of the Blades. Guys, I want to get your opinion again before we get to Craig Lachlan to talk some Washington Capitals here. And Berkey, we'll start with you. As you heard in the update there, the NHL GM's meeting. You're a former NHL GM. They got to get cooking on something here, right? I know it's a very fluid situation with the upcoming season, but when would you suspect they have to have some semblance or some plan in place for next season?
Well, first off, they still have a little more time, but I don't think too much more. The whole key is building availability, and because the concert business is stalled right now, building availability is probably the easiest it's ever been for teams. So what the league does in a typical year is when the season begins by November 1st, you've got to submit 50 building dates, or 60, I think it is now. And there's got to be so many Mondays, Tuesdays, et cetera. You can't give them all Saturdays and Wednesdays. And then the league puts together a schedule based on that. So what they would have done to the teams by now, and going way back, probably 60 days even before we were done, and said, give us your building availability date starting January 1st. And the buildings will be wide open. Even the NBA shared buildings, they probably haven't done their dates yet. So the buildings would be wide open. And they'll say, okay, here's the dates you need to hold. Then I envision, and they probably would have said today on the call, and I'll find out later. I'll talk to a couple GMs later on. They'll say, okay, we're gonna change divisions here. We have to change divisions. As long as the Canadian border is closed, teams can't come over from the U.S. They got to quarantine for 14 days. So we're going to play a Canadian division. And then what we're going to do is we're going to compact all the other three divisions. We're going to make them geographically sound so the travel costs are reduced. And then you're going to see a compressed schedule, I'm guessing, of 60 games roughly, and way more back-to-backs. They're going to watch the travel costs more closely, way more compression in the schedule, no all-star game, no bye week. No outdoor classics that kind of bring activity to a standstill for a weekend because they want to feature that game. And it's going to be different. It's going to have a real different look to it. But it's going to be fun. Now, it's going to change the dynamics of the goaltender position.
Yes.
You're going to need a 1A and 1B. You're going to have more back-to-backs, more 3 and 4s. But I think this is long overdue. The schedule in the league, they do so much right, but the schedule and the travel has been badly managed over the past couple decades.
And that's why it shouldn't come as a shocker either yesterday that they postponed, if you will, the Winter Classic and All-Star Weekend, which was scheduled for Sunrise, a place, Stewie, you know well. But certainly, you know, Stewie, you can piggyback off this. I just think there's got to be a possibility of expanded rosters, too. That's why I think teams have actually been pretty smart. You know, the Maple Leafs signing Aaron Dell to be their third string. I think, you know, knock on wood, we hope everything goes according to plan when they do come back. But you look at the other sports without a bubble, players have gotten COVID, so you got to have a contingency plan, no?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's unprecedented times where guys don't even know when to skate and when to train, when to take weeks off, when to not take weeks off. So there's definitely going to be injuries. And, you know, hockey players are definitely creatures of habit and their training patterns here. But, you know, Berkey was right, and he called it in real time, ding, 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 that, you know, there's going to be pain coming. And we thought that the All-Star game or the Winter Classic was going to be a launch pad for next season, and they postponed that. So, you know, we were talking a January 1st start date. That might be pushed back, and I wouldn't be surprised just based on the announcement of all these postponements.
Let's take a look now, as mentioned, guys, at the Washington Capitals. Again, Colby Cohen, Flyers studio analyst, coming up in about 20 from now. We'll take a look at the Philadelphia Flyers. But for now, we bring in Capitals TV analyst Craig Loughlin. Craig, great to be with you today. Thanks so much for doing this. And I think Stewie and Berkey make excellent points how big, how much more important it is, especially to have a very competent backup goaltender. What's it like to have Henrik Lundqvist as a Washington Capital?
Well, Nick and the boys, it's huge. I think when you look at it, I could see that coming. The writing was sort of on the wall throughout the season when they didn't re-up Holtby and weren't having any discussions with him. I thought he'd make a lot more money on the open market, but they could not afford Braden Holtby with Ovi's contract coming up. They're so tight to the cap. They only have about $50,000 left, really. And that's if they trade somebody. So the goaltending situation, as you guys were discussing, with a lot of back-to-backs, three and fours, I think Lundqvist has a competitive fire, and he said that he wants to win. The Caps need to get back to winning after falling in the last two playoff rounds. It just wasn't acceptable. So you have Lundqvist, Vanacek, Samsonov, and Phoenix Copley are the four guys that'll be fighting it out, but it's obviously Lundqvist and Samsonov's goal to start, and I'm not sure if Sammy's given to him as the number one. You guys mentioned 1A and 1B. I think Lundqvist is going to give Samsonov a run for his money, being such a young goaltender.
Berkey?
Thanks for joining us, Locker. Appreciate it very much.
Berkey, great. Oh, thanks so this for... having me on board. I can't wait to read your book, by the way, but that's another subject.
Thank you. So Brian McClellan comes in after George McPhee was there for a long time, put some pieces together, and they have a parade. Talk about Brian McClellan as a GM.
I think he's, you know, the thing about Brian, he's very level-headed about his decision-making. There's no quick decisions. Oh, we're not doing this. We need to make a move. He's very patient in the vision that he has for this team. I think it ran off the rails a little bit this year. And so because of that, he's tried to retool. But the retool is to win again. I think the Capitals' window is small with some of the players that they have, like an Ovechkin, like a Backstrom, like a John Carlson, who've been here a long time. So they want to take that next step. I think what Brian has done, he's addressed the issues that the Caps need to focus on. And case in point, this summer or this free agent period that passed, he focused on the necessary needs of this team and being financially responsible. And he did that in a lot of different ways. To me, he retooled the team. And guys, they're a better team in the back line. He addressed the issues of defense, ending up about 15th in the league. The offense is always going to be here in Washington. It's how they play defense, and he wants to bring the culture. He wants to bring that type of details back to the game that the Caps have had. And I think making the coaching move, making the players' moves, I think there's a lot of positives here in Washington that they want another kick at the can.
So with the Capitals bringing in Peter Laviolette as their new coach, do you see that being the safe choice or the right choice? And do you really see him pulling back the reins offensively for players like Ovechkin and Nicklas Backstrom?
Stewie, a little bit of both. I think when you look at it, I don't think that Laviolette's going to come in and make a whole lot of changes. I mean, we've talked to him, and he's been on Zoom and all that stuff, talking about being active defensively, creating offense, moving up with the D, and that's why they got Schultz, and they obviously have Carlson in the mix in the back line. I just think it's another voice. I think when you have a Barry Trotz, and to me, Todd Reirden's a disciple of Barry Trotz, so for 2 years, a lot of the same messages were delivered to the players, and I just think they lost focus in their details of their game. I mean, the way the Islanders dispatched the Washington Capitals, I never thought would happen, and all of a sudden it's over, and the Caps are, you know, out of the playoffs and out of the bubble. I think that he's going to come in. He's known to be sort of a tough guy, but I don't really believe that. I think with players, you know, we all get that impression as media guys that, oh yeah, this coach is a real hard son of a gun. But when you talk to people about John Tortorella, Mike Keenan, guys like that, with their players, are really good guys. And I think Laviolette's just going to set the page a little differently. And I think bringing in McCarthy, all of a sudden now the defense has a different look on how he's going to coach them. And he's been such a good coach throughout his career that that's going to help them defensively in their own zone, where, guys, it was chaotic. It was just not little details. It was turnaways. It was not playing the man properly. It was casually losing one-on-ones. And you can't do this in this league. And to me, the new voice had to come in. Laviolette, of the guys that they were talking to, like a Babcock and guys like that, he was the right choice, I think, for this team to move forward.
Chatting with Craig Laughlin, the Capitals TV analyst, is Nick Alberga, Brian Burke, and Anthony Stewart here on Hockey Central, the Friday edition. Can you pinpoint a player or two who will benefit from Peter Laviolette coming into the fold, or at least a new voice behind the bench?
I don't know if I can pinpoint a player. I think that he's going to come in, as new coaches always do, and players are always on pins and needles. Oh, a new coach is coming in. I'm going to have to show them that I belong. A guy like Strong. Young guys I look at having to make a mark here in Washington are critical because of the cap issues. A guy like Sprong has to play in the top 12. On the other side, there'll be competition for Malenstein, Kino, Gersich, guys like that. The big decision to be made, I think, from Laviolette is probably how they sort out the defense, because the defense right now is a pretty strong group. I think the one guy that I think will help from Laviolette is a guy like Dylan. He was here for a short time. I saw spurts of excellence playing with Carlson. I also saw a little bit of playing not as assertive as I thought he did when I watched him in San Jose. So maybe that little spark from Laviolette, McCarthy, little teaching points will help him. But I think when you look at the D, when you have Dylan and Carlson, Orloff and Schultz, Siegenthaler, who just re-upped yesterday for $800K, which I thought was low for him, and the Caps got a bargain, Jensen, Van Riemsdyk, and a guy that's sort of on the outside looking in, but I think is going to make the roster, is Ledoux, who they got, who he played a little bit in L.A. and played most of his time, about 100 games, I think, in the American League. So you look at that group, I think they're going to be stronger with McCarthy and Laviolette. I think guys like Ponick have something to prove. He's a well-paid player, but he couldn't crack the top nine, which when they signed him, they thought Ponick's going to be the guy that's going to crack the top nine. The one spot the Caps have to focus on, and I think this is throughout the lineup, is third line right winger and what's going to happen to the D. Can they carry a D? Because the lines, guys, I don't think Laviolette's going to come in, other than Filippi Kuzi and Backe maybe, to play with Ovi. You know, ended up Ovi, Kuzi, Wilson, Verana, Backstrom, Oshie, Hagelin, Eller. Who's that third-line right winger where they got production from, if you guys remember during the Stanley Cup run, from a guy like Connolly? They haven't found that, and I think that's a key part, that there could be one more move lurking with the abundance of D they had, especially right-side D guys, and we always talk about that. Five of the eight Caps so-called starting D that could start this season are righties. I would expect one of them maybe to be moved for a guy to play that third hole in the right wing.
Berkey?
Yeah, so let's, a little history here, showing both of our ages, Locker. We actually played against each other in college. You were a freshman at Clarkson when I was a senior at Providence. But your
Absolutely
son saw the light.
I remember that.
And your son saw the light and picked the right program to play college hockey at.
He absolutely loved Providence College, and he had such a blast, and that was a big thing. And also, it was the fact that I got to know, throughout my years, Lou Lamoriello, Berkey, and the story goes like this, and a lot of people don't know this. During my senior year, I had the opportunity to play in Nova Scotia with the Voyageurs. So I went to the American League. As soon as the season was over in college, I went to the American League. And it was, I think, during the spring break. Well, during my time in Nova Scotia, who gives me a call than none other, Lou Lamoriello. Lou Lamoriello says to me, says, Craig, I know you're in the American League. You probably don't want to do this. But would you be interested, and I think it's the only time it's ever been done in college hockey, and it was absolutely the most spectacular thing I was involved with. They said, we're going to have seniors versus seniors, East versus West, and we're going to play in Minnesota. And I think it was in the rink that had the glass boards at the time. I can't remember the name of the rink. Maybe you can remember.
In St. Paul.
But it was what?
In St. Paul, yeah.
It was in St. Paul, yes. And Lou said, look, Craig, I know you're there. Would you come to Providence for a week to train with us before we head to Minnesota? I said, Mr. Lamoriello, I'll be there tomorrow. And to me, that started my relationship with Lou and started my relationship about how great Providence College was and a perfect fit for my son, Kyle.
I know it's very early right now. Alex Ovechkin's got one more year on his deal. How many years do you see him re-signing, and is it with the Caps guaranteed? And do you see him breaking Wayne Gretzky's record sooner than later?
Okay, so let's start with the first one. Number one, they are going to re-up him, and I imagine it will be a very similar deal to Nick Backstrom. They are frickin' frack. I mean, he's coming off a deal at over $10 million. I think it's going to be honest with you, a five-year term. And it's going to be 9 or 10, just like Backy got. And I think those two guys are going to sail into the sunset, leading this franchise in every category and being the best 1-2 punch maybe the NHL has seen during the tenure of Alex Ovechkin and Nick Backstrom. So, yes, the deal will be done. They say they're going to talk during training camp, whenever that happens, to move the contract forward. I still think with 48 goals last year, this guy just scores. I don't care what age he is. Somehow he figures out a way to score, and the goalies can't stop his one-timer. So he'll continue to lead the Caps in that category. I think when you come to breaking Wayne Gretzky's record, wow. I mean, that when you look at the numbers, you say theoretically that is possible. I just look at it and where he is in his career, and can he keep going for another 4 to 5 years at the pace he is? And I'm not sure he can, guys. I think he's just going to fall short of Wayne Gretzky's record. I just think it's going to be 10 or 15 or 20 away from beating the great one. But I think that's where he's going to end up just because of where he is in his age, where he is coming into the Caps. But he'll always be a Cap. He will retire a Cap. He's going nowhere.
Locker, you're around Ovi a lot. I mean, you know, what do you think? I know you can't speak for him, but how much longer do you think he wants to play in this league? I mean, there's been little whispers that maybe he leaves, goes back to Russia and plays, but obviously this record, you know, it's in high regard. Like, how much do you think he has left, and how much do you think he has more to give here?
When I sat down with him after he had his 700th up in New Jersey the next day or the day after that, a couple of days later, I sat down with Ovi and interviewed him, and we talked about that. And he just says he's having so much fun. He wants to keep playing. I think he's driven by the fact that the NHL is the best league in the world. He is still dominating it when it comes to goal scoring. I still think the thoughts in the back of a lot of people's mind hearing whispers about going back to Russia. Guys, he can go back to Russia at 40 or 43 or whenever and play just like Yager did. He can do that, and he will be a superstar over there at that age, in my mind, because of what his whole mound of work that he has done. He is a complete superstar over there as he is here. I think that Russian part of it, I would believe that maybe when his time is done in the NHL, he goes back for a year and plays wherever over there for a year, just as a swan song just to sort of bookend his career. And other than that, you know, I think that's where he's at. I think when I talked to him, he was as competitive. He wanted to compete. It's not like he's on the downside. We look at athletes that are 35, 36, oh, they're in the, you know, the twilight of their careers. I think Ovi is, as we know him, is one of those superstars that can deliver at any age. I don't know what it is in his DNA, but I believe he's going to be here, and he'll be here for the term, I think, of 5 years. Or they'd say, you know what, we want you part of the franchise, and they'll give him some job at the end. I don't know, but I would think it would be a five-year term and then move on. And if it's Russia, it's Russia for Ovi.
Last one for me, Berkey.
Yeah, I did want to get this in, Locker, before we let you go. The work you've done in the field of cancer research, your wife Linda has a very rare form of cancer. She's fought a courageous fight, but you've stepped up your family's raising money for the studies of rare types of cancer. Talk about that, please.
Yeah, it's the Lachlan Foundation, Berkey. We were at the point where, you know, it was during the Stanley Cup run. It was a weird situation where I was doing TV for the Caps. They asked me to go to Vegas, and I actually said no because I had to tend to my wife, who was in the midst of radiation and chemo and all that, and no one really knew that. So I stayed back and just did studio work. And out of that, we saw that we had heard from a lot of people that had a lot of rare cancers that weren't being focused on. You know, you see a lot of cancers, they get a lot of research, they get a lot of money, but her particular cancer, uterine cancer and a specific type, wasn't getting a lot of research money. So what we did is we started the foundation, we raised a ton of money, and we're now working with Johns Hopkins here in town to put it into a program that women now, when they get these rare cancers, it'll be a test, and they will know that they are on the way or on the verge or could have an opportunity or a chance to get these rare cancers and how we can stop them before they really get going. So we're excited. We're working with Hopkins. It's a fabulous hospital right up the road in Baltimore here. And we are so excited to work and be a part of it. You know, Berkey, you're around the league so long, you see how great the NHL does. And I just thought, you know what, this is a perfect time for me to step up and really focus on something that's near and dear to our heart. And our whole family has bought into this. Our friends have been unbelievable with the support, not only to us personally, but to the financial side of this business, not business, but it's a foundation, and how we can better serve the people here and hopefully around the world in the future if Johns Hopkins finds a so-called cure, at least something that can prevent these rare cancers from happening.
Very well said, Locker. You're a great man. Really, really appreciate your time today. Thanks so much.
Thank you very much, guys. Have a great weekend.
You as well. That's Craig Lachlan, Capitals TV analyst. And Berkey, we'll get your thoughts just on the Washington Capitals in general, what this team has done here in the offseason. Justin Schultz comes in free agency. Henrik Lundqvist, they got a backup. And, of course, Holtby leaving to Vancouver.
I like what the changes they've made. I like their team. I think Todd Reardon's getting some dirt shoveled on him here unfairly. He's a hell of a mm-hmm. coach. Maybe not the precise fit they wanted, but I've worked with Peter Laviolette in the Olympics in Russia, and he was, you know, he is a good coach, and he's a teaching coach. He's a patient coach. He's just not patient during the games, and that's the key to being a successful coach for me.
Stewie, what do you think of Peter Laviolette with Washington?
Well, I did not play for him, Nick, but he's a great coach. He's a no-nonsense guy. All his teams are well-coached. They stick to the system. I think they probably need a little bit more attention to detail on the defensive end, and I think that's why I asked, is he the right coach, or is he is he the coach that they're just going to pick for no reason? So I like Laviolette. I think he's going to come in, help put this group over the top. The real question is now, has that window closed? Does Ovechkin have enough juice? Does Backstrom have enough juice? Can Samsonov be a true number one in the National Hockey League, or are they going to rely on Lundqvist? So there's a couple questions here, but I just like the fact that the GM believes in this group. They didn't make any major moves. They didn't touch any of the core guys out there up front. And the Washington Capitals, I know it's a pandemic, but I still think they're one of those top teams in the East still.
There's one thing we know about Peter Laviolette. He loves the Metro Division, at least this iteration of it. Teams Carolina, the Islanders, Philadelphia, and now the Washington Capitals.
I thought you were going to say Dry Island. I thought you said Dry Island. He loves Dry Island.
Yes, that too. That too. With that in mind, the Philadelphia Flyers next up here on our offseason tour. Flyers studio analyst Colby Cohen will drop by in mere moments after this. It's Nick Alberga, Brian Burke, and Anthony Stewart. This is Hockey Central Sportsnet 590 The Fan. It is time to take a look at the Philadelphia Flyers as our off-season tour continues. Hockey Central continues on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Nick Alberga, Brian Burke, and Anthony Stewart with you. Earlier in the first block, Craig Laughlin, Capitals TV analyst, dropped by. Now we turn our focus to the Philadelphia Flyers. As mentioned, Flyers studio analyst Colby Cohen now joins us. How's it going, Colby?
It's going well, guys. How are you guys holding up today?
Fantastic. Thanks so much for doing this. Certainly, I think when you look at this Flyers offseason, I would call it incomplete so far because there's so much racetrack ahead. But, you know, we can start with Matt Niskanen because I think that surprised a lot of the hockey world. What would you make of that surprise announcement?
Yeah, I mean, I certainly was caught off guard, as I think everybody else was. And, you know, he really meant so much to this team this year. And, you know, everybody always talks about Ivan Provorov, and rightfully so, because, you know, he's on his way to being a really, really good player in this league. But, you know, the effect Matt Niskanen had in that dressing room and what he was able to do for the defensive core, he really just calmed the whole group down and sort of taught all these guys that, you know, making the 5-foot pass is actually an okay play to make and not forcing it all the time. So it was surprising. I don't know Matt all that well personally, but I did talk to some guys who have played with him throughout the years. And, you know, they all told me that he's a guy who, you know, is very well thought out. And if he made this decision, it's one he's going to stick to and don't expect to see him back. And, you know, I think a lot of it had to do with his family and sort of the uncertainty surrounding, you know, the situation of the league right now. And you know, they'll miss him in a lot of ways. But I personally thought throughout the entire regular season, he probably was the most important and consistent player that the team had.
That's a good point, Colby, because it really stunned me in that facet. And again, there's a lot that goes behind the scenes. You being a former player knows that. But Matt Niskanen, I could argue that was one of his best seasons, if not his best in the NHL. What'd you make of it?
Yeah, I mean, he did what he similarly did for Orlov in Washington mm-hmm. with Provorov. And, you know, Ivan Provorov, he's the guy in Philly, but I still think that he's a young player that needs that mentorship. And, you know, the things that Matt Niskanen did leading by example on the ice, I mean, even for me, watching him in the studio every night, I'm sitting there thinking, you know, he really simplifies the game and has understood how to, you know, take what is given and the consistency in his game night in and night out. It's so impressive. You know, I never quite appreciated it until he came to Philadelphia and I got to watch him every night. So I thought he was phenomenal. I did think he struggled when they came back. He never really got his game under his feet. And I actually think overall it's one of the reasons that they didn't have any, you know, more success in the playoffs, because I did really feel that if you watch the Flyers every night, he was one of the engines that really made the team go.
Rookie?
Yeah, I agree with that, Colby. Thanks for coming on with us. I thought he was really good, and he struggled a bit when they came back out. But I thought really the Flyers got out of sync. They were so good before the pause and really didn't seem to find that same groove.
Yeah, you know, what was surprising to me was, you know, how well the Flyers players sort of ditched the bad habits that had crept into a lot of the veteran players' games throughout, you know, the last grouping of years. And, you know, watching Giroux and Couturier and, you know, all of these guys who are obviously really good players, Voracek, you know, during the regular season, the buy-in of, you know, good habits all over the ice and the buy-in of, you know, not turning the puck over at the red line or at the blue line, something that just absolutely plagued them and put way too much pressure on their goaltending the last couple of years. They really got that out of their game during the regular season. And then some of the younger players, you know, whether it's Travis Konechny or Travis Sanheim, you know, they followed suit and they said, well, if Voracek's going to make a smart play instead of trying to make a selfish play at the blue line, well, then I better do it too. And then you got into the playoffs. A couple of the guys, they couldn't find the back of the net. And then I think, you know, they started trying to do a little bit too much. And then I think that really sort of crept into everybody's game. And Berkey, I think that that's probably the best way to put it, is they just never really got into sync.
Sean Couturier had a great season last year, winning the Selke Trophy. Were you surprised to see him win the trophy? And I'm not sure if anyone's talking about it in Philly. He's eligible to sign an extension next summer, and he's coming off a cap at a 4.33. What do you think his next ticket's going to be for his next contract as well?
Yeah, I mean, he really is a player that when you watch him every single night, you just really appreciate what he brings. I mean, I spent a lot of, you know, my pro career in the Bruins organization, you know, in Providence, watching a lot of Patrice Bergeron and just appreciating what a guy like that does every night. And I really see a lot of that in Sean Couturier. He just makes everybody around him better. Anytime, you know, a guy isn't going well, they put him with Couturier because he seems to get every other forward going when they throw him up with him. It was actually kind of like a running joke. When a guy was in a slump, they put him with Couturier because, you know, what he's able to do. His offensive confidence continues to grow. He continues to be more sure of himself as a scorer and as an offensive player. And you know, $4 million for that. He may have the most team-friendly contract in the NHL. I mean, I'd have to ask Berkey his opinion on that. Obviously, he's been in that position signing players before. But, I mean, he's obviously due for a pay raise. We've seen the league and the cap as a flat, you know, issue, and what players' market value has sort of changed. You know, Stewie, I don't really know what I expect to see him get. He's been in the league a long time already. He's played a lot of hard and heavy minutes. So I'm sure he's going to, you know, sort of be able to control it. I think he's earned the fact to get that long deal to really cash in on a payday. But, you know, I would say guys who play as hard and heavy as him, you know, when they start to get up near 30 years old, they definitely do start to slow down. So it's a good point, Stewie. It'll be something that I'll definitely, now that you mention it, we'll be keeping an eye on. But you know, he's obviously deserved to get paid a little bit and make some more money.
Berkey, do you want to weigh in?
Well, I love the player. I just don't know where this, just so you know, Colby, this when Stewie's on, it's a let's make a deal where everyone wins unlimited money. Stewie just wants the players to get paid. He doesn't care if there's any sense to it at all. I don't know where things are going with this flat cap my butt. There's going to be another rollback. This year there's 30% rollback. There'll be another rollback next year too, but that's fine. I really love the player. I voted for him for the Selke, and I think he's a, like you said, he's been a bargain to this point, and I like guys to get paid that earn it like that. So we had a real nice news story on Oscar Lindblom. Well, tell us, we're going to have another good one on Nolan Patrick.
Yeah, I mean, Oscar, you know, chills. You hear his name, the hairs on your arms start to stick up. And I actually was just chatting with him because I knew I was coming on the show today, and I figured you guys would ask me. And, you know, he is working out, feeling good, skating in Sweden. Says he's starting to, like, get his strength back. When he played in the playoffs, he, you know, was amazing. And even he said, I was so out of shape and I had no strength. He's like, the adrenaline was what carried me. But yeah, I mean, that's another interesting case with Nolan Patrick. I saw something this morning about him, you know, participating pretty regularly in scrimmages with, you know, out in Canada without any issues, playing at a high pace, starting to take some contact. So it definitely sounds like the team is planning on having him as a participant in training camp this year, which would obviously be huge. You know, he comes back on a qualifying offer. And, you know, when you have a player that has that much ability playing for $800,000, if he can be healthy, it's obviously a great thing for your team. I think he has a bit of a chip on his shoulder, and I think he feels like he has a lot to prove here in Philadelphia. You know, the other thing that I really came to learn, having been around a little bit in Philly now, is that he has a little bit of a reputation of being standoffish with the media, and I think the treatment of him because of that, I think maybe is a little bit unfair. And, you know, having talked to some of his teammates, you know, he lives with Kevin Hayes, who's a very well-liked player in the league. You know, Chris Stewart, who I've spoken to about him numerous times, the guys really like him. They really care about him. They want to see him back. I think the whole locker room wants to see him back. And, you know, I think that'll give him a little bit of a sense of belonging with the team and sort of some more confidence that he isn't, you know, a bust and that he is going to play again. And you know, I'm with you. I'm hoping to see the guy feeling good enough to live his life, feeling good enough to be in the NHL. And, I mean, it would be a huge boost for the Flyers starting the season if you've got Oscar Lindblom back, who, you know, was really on his way when he, you know, when he had that diagnosis to being a major impact player for this team. I mean, you know, he plays that game that's so reliable and has so many bonuses and no negatives to it. And then you throw Nolan Patrick in there and you bring two guys back in that you didn't have last year that, you know, can really make an impact. So, you know, I'm crossing my fingers. All signs are pointing to having him, you know, back in training camp this year as a participant. And you know, we'll just have to keep watching it as we get closer and hope that things normalize for him.
With Flyers studio analyst Colby Cohen. Go ahead, Stewie.
Check it out. I was going to say, Brian Elliott had a pretty good season last year getting 16 wins, and they brought him back on a one-year deal. How instrumental has he been in the success of Carter Hart in a mentorship role?
Yeah, you know, I think he's been great. He takes a pay cut to come back in Philadelphia because I think that, you know, he really appreciates the work that Chuck Fletcher has put into, you know, tweaking things and the communication with AV and Carter Hart. I mean, it's obviously Carter Hart's net at this point, but you guys talked earlier in the show about how important, you know, that goalie tandem is this year because of the back-to-backs in the schedule. And you know, I really think that having Brian Elliott back, he's a veteran, he's a well-liked guy. You know, those things are important, these veteran backup goaltenders, their ability to, you know, be that good teammate and to face the hard questions and, you know, maybe get put into a position where Carter Hart gets a back-to-back but doesn't play well, so he's got to come in garbage time. So, you know, it kind of takes a mature player who really understands the situation. And you know, one of the things that I said as soon as they re-signed, you know, Brian Elliott, because I heard some rumors out there that they were looking at, you know, Greiss and some other guys, and said, look, Flyers goaltending was not a problem for them last year. It was a strength, and don't try to fix what's not broken. And you know, I kind of appreciate that with Chuck Fletcher this off season. And you know, people have been up in arms that the Flyers haven't been more active, but you know, I would argue that you get a couple of forwards back. You know, obviously Matt Niskanen was a shocking thing, but you just can't replace Matt Niskanen. It's not that easy. And I kind of like the patience and, you know, they do have a little bit of cap space with some people they need to sign, but nothing crazy. And I kind of appreciate the let's try not to fix what's not broken mentality. And you know, I like it with Brian Elliott.
No doubt about that. Just wrapping up here with Colby Cohen, Flyers studio analyst. I just wanted you to talk a bit about the bottom six and guys who are really progressing. I think quietly, Philadelphia has done a good job of maturing their prospects. I was really impressed with Nicolas Aubé-Kubel this past season, Joel Farabee, and Morgan Frost, I think, has a bright future as well. There's a lot of depth on this roster going forward, isn't there?
Yeah, I mean, they really do. And I think that's one of the reasons they've been a little bit quiet in free agency. I mean, I know there was a couple of forwards that actually, you know, are former players of AV that were free agents that wanted to come to Philadelphia. And, you know, I think they kind of got the stiff arm from Chuck Fletcher saying, you know, we like what we have with some of the guys, you know, whether it's Bunneman, who played some games for the Flyers last year, and they've got a couple of kids, Tanner Lozinski coming in from Ohio State, Wade Allison from Northern Michigan. They're both older, bigger guys at 23 years old. And I think the Flyers are sort of counting on one or two of those guys pushing for a roster spot. Morgan Frost is another guy. He played some games. He had a couple of goals. He's going to get an opportunity to play down the middle somewhere on that roster. Joel Farabee, who, you know, I was just really impressed with him as a young guy. You know, he's 20 years old. He comes out of BU after 1 year. And, you know, I kind of wondered, would he be able to adjust to the fact that he wasn't going to be, you know, in a role necessarily where you're afforded the opportunity to make mistakes. And, you know, what impressed me with Farabee the most was that when he played on the first line, he understood what his role was. When he played on the fourth line, he understood that he needed to change his game a little bit. I mean, I kind of had a front row seat when Brad Marchand did that when he was a rookie. You know, he started on the fourth line with Claude Julien, and he understood that there was a certain type of game that he needed to play. And, you know, for Farabee as a 20-year-old and even last year as a 19-year-old, to have that wherewithal to realize, okay, I'm playing on the fourth line tonight. I need to simplify things. I need to make body contact. I need to play faster with the puck. I need to make sure that I win wall battles. You know, that type of intelligence in a player that age, it's promising. So I think you'll see a couple of names and up in the forward group next year that you might not recognize coming out of college. But I do think that they're expecting a couple of those players to play who make $700,000 to $900,000 and give the Flyers a little bit of flexibility with their cap, you know, to be able to potentially make a move when they do want to.
You're right. The every team needs that type of production from their bottom six. And Colby, we really appreciate this. Thanks so much.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Enjoy your day, guys.
You as well. That's Colby Cohen, Flyers studio analyst. Berkey, you were able to get a team over the hill, over the hump to win it all. The Flyers were certainly a team going into the bubble, a lot of projections. They get the number one seed, but fell flat, as you mentioned. What do they need to do to get to that next level, in your opinion?
I think just continue to grow. I think what Colby just said is exactly right. To get some of the older players to drop some bad habits, that takes some time. They were the best team in the league for the 10 games prior to the pause. I like the composition of their team. I think especially if Nolan Patrick comes back, they've got a really good group up front. They lost Niskanen, who is a very important player, but they signed Eric Gustafson, re-signed Braun. So I think they'll be okay on defense. Lindblom should be back healthy. I like the way they're going. And the goaltending to me, you remember last year they were splitting, they were making Elliott play the road games. Mm-hmm. And playing Hart at home. And they're going to try to get away from that and do more of a 1A, 1B. But I like their team.
Stewie?
Yeah, I remember watching. We watched most of the games last year, obviously, because my brother Chris was there. But I think they just need to be consistent. They you know, they'd win two games, go on a three-game slide. But once they hit their stride, you know, near the end of the before the pause there, they actually were playing really, really good hockey. So what I like about this team is their younger guys are starting to have bigger roles. Guys are starting to step in and take the reins from Giroux and Voracek. They're still quality players, but once they hand those reins fully over to these younger guys, next generation, I believe that's when they're going to take the next step.
Very well said. This weekend show have just flew by. We'll hit the break. Our final one of the week, end of this show. It's Nick Alberga, Brian Burke, and Anthony Stewart. This is Hockey Central on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. All right, some quick hitters to wrap up this edition of Hockey Central. The NHL postponing both the Winter Classic and All-Star Weekend in 2021. We talked about that earlier on. But, Berkey, I want to get your thoughts on Jake Virtanen re-signing with the Vancouver Canucks. A much maligned player, but he stays there for the time being, 2 years, $5.1 million total.
Yeah, he had 18 goals. He had a good arbitration case. I think this is a reasonable settlement in terms of they want more consistency from Jake Virtanen. And the 18 goals are fine. 18 goals are 18 goals. They're hard to get. But he needs to be physical. He needs to play with more intensity. He needs to be more consistent. He's a good kid. He's worth some trouble. Well, you know, like we used to say about a Nazem Kadri when he was a young kid, he's worth some trouble. He's aggravating the coaching staff sometimes, but he's worth some trouble. And I think Jake's worth some trouble, and I think he'll deliver on this contract.
Plays heavy, and that's what I like about him. And Stewie, certainly I think you have a great eye on Twitter, at least I think so. You say one thing about Jake Virtanen gets Canucks Twitter going, but I do like this fit there. And I still think he has a lot to give, doesn't he?
I do, and I think this is one of the cases where I think you just got to slot him somewhere and leave him there. Don't bother him. Don't be coming in, bringing him in for video, pointing out his mistakes. You don't need to call the guy, but put him on that top line. Put him with JT Miller, Pettersson, leave him there for 25 games and then just assess. That's when you're going to know exactly what you have in Vertanen. And you don't wake up and score 18 goals in this league. He's big, he's strong, mm-hmm. He can put the puck in the net. Leave him be. If you leave him there for a full season, there's no reason why he won't finish with 25 and 50 points. So I hope Canucks fans are listening and they can leave my mentions alone. Thank you very much.
No, I welcome more mentions to Stewie and bad mentions at that. Dennis Gurianov, a two-year contract, Berkey, same deal pretty much as Vertanen. He's another under-the-radar type guy. We talked about Roope Hintz a year ago. This year it's about Dennis Gurianov, I like to call him.
Yeah, I like him. He's a good-sized guy. It took him a while to get here. He didn't come over as a kid. I like the contract. I like the player. He can score goals. He's got size. He doesn't play black and blue, but he's a big-bodied guy, and now he's got a deep playoff run under his belt.
And a couple other signings as well. Dmitry Kulikov to New Jersey, 1 year, $1.15 million. And Dominic Simone, another depth signing for the Calgary Flames, 1 year contract at $700K. It's been a lot of fun. I'll be back next week. I'd like to thank Matt Marchese, Dylan Brown, Lance Kennedy, of course, our two guests, and Craig Laughlin and Colby Cohen earlier today. And, of course, my two fantastic co-hosts in Brian Burke and Anthony Stewart. I'm Nick Alberga. Thanks so much for listening, and have a fantastic weekend.